Start your day with Morning Edition and wind it down with All Things Considered, only on KPBS. From global headlines to local stories, stay informed, inspired, and connected. Tune in daily or listen anytime at kpbs.org.
You are now listening to Meridian Arts.
The story you're about to hear is true. It takes place in the wild world of rap and contains mature content that may not be appropriate for all audiences. Like NWA said,
parental discretion's advised.
I'm 46 years old and a real rap aficionado. As I'm sure you know, the culture of hip-hop has four major tenets: DJing, breakdancing, graffiti, and rap. I study them all, but I'm really interested in rap. Breaking is for the body. Graffiti, that's visual. DJing is what you hear. Rap is what we think or say. I'm a lyricist, and I'm fascinated by the impact of rap writers. I've played my share of shows all over the country, and one thing that allows you is a ton of conversation about the art and history of rap. Many a night has been spent in a van, taxi, or green room with my crew and shouting matches about where San Diego sits in the world of rap and why. These conversations were thrown into overdrive this past year as a bounty of rap lists, interviews, and celebrations rolled out in 2023 for the 50th anniversary of rap. Me, being the black rap nerd I am, I noticed certain cities were special. They fit differently into the puzzle of rap. If you're familiar with my show, The Parker Edison Project on KPBS, you've heard me speaking about New Jersey's number of great lyricists. Another example of a city that sits different is Long Island. It's not given its credit for variety of groundbreaking MCs that have come out of there. Chuck D, Political, De La Soul, Artsy, Busta Rhymes, Animated, Rakim, the greatest. Some places have something about their contribution that makes them unique. San Diego is one of those cities, for a couple of reasons. But if I just start listing them, they won't make as much sense. You kinda gotta see them in action. I tapped in with some of those close friends I've been discussing rap with. We put together this series to break it all down for you. Let's start here. Everybody's celebrating hip-hop's 50th, but San Diego rap isn't as old as New York rap. San Diego rap is closer to 40. We had things happening in the 70s, but things started bubbling for us in the 80s. We sort of are like the little brother. I'm gonna map the whole thing out, but here's the deal. This isn't the history of hip-hop. This isn't a complete timeline, but it is what happened. Some details will be left out. When we talk about the Boston Tea Party, there's little mention of what else they did that day. We hit the important parts: the boat, the tea, the conflict. Keep that in mind as you listen to this. This is about San Diego rap and the incredible way it got to where it is today. You ready? This is a San Diego story.
Stay connected to the world around you. KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.
San Diego rap grows in the 80s, but the seeds were planted in the mid-60s with a rare indie soul label called Muset Records. It wasn't an inspirational labor of love, but a sideline project, a tax write-off for four prominent black doctors here in the city. It was located on Logan Avenue, next to the Sportsman's Nightclub. As a label, Muset may have blazed the trail that later led to Lion's Den Records on National Avenue in National City. Roy Lyons envisioned the label to be the San Diego version of Motown, which is why he selected his location to be in the heart of the then black community. However, like the earlier mentioned Muset Records, Lion's Den Records ended up being just a tax write-off and disappeared after only a year or so. Lyons did get local airplay with his artist Soulful Ernie. His single, Party Rock, rocked the parties. Released in 1982, the song name-checked Ocean View Park, a local hub for black culture at the time. Its length, perhaps coincidentally, is 6 minutes and 19 seconds. The first thing I wanted to do was get in touch with Ernie to find out if that was intentional, but I had zero success. Not only could I not find him, I couldn't find much info on him. That's what friends are for.
Hey, Pete, I found this article by John Applegate from The Reader, September 2nd, 1982. It's about the Black Frog, a black-owned restaurant slash nightclub that featured Soulful Ernie as a DJ.
That's Jay Smith, a.k.a. 1019, San Diego native and longtime rap fan. He's one of those tour mates I've been having an ongoing debate with for years.
So it says, the success of the Frog appears to depend largely on how Soulful Ernie can draw customers with his music and personal popularity.
Ooh.
Hey, he said, looking up at one of the Frog's waitresses one night as he slid into a booth to be interviewed, he pointed at an unlit pot candle on the table.
What?
She said. You want me to light the candle for you, Ernie? Yeah, he said. I do.
Sure,
she said, dragging an uneager flame from a matchbook.
I'll light your candle for you, Ernie. There you go. Anything you say, Ernie.
Then she turned and asked the interviewer if he would like another drink. He declined. I'm okay too, said Soulful Ernie, but she had already left. Since I've been here, they've been listening to me, he said, meaning the management. And I'm trying in every way to make this the ultimate class club in San Diego, with entertainment, variety. We got jazz, top 40, dancing, drinks, jukebox, you name it. We got
phone for you, Ernie. Long distance,
said Glenn Smith passing by. And to be honest, it doesn't say who Glenn Smith is, and I am not really sure.
Fair enough. Well, what else does it say?
Phone call from Phoenix, said Soulful as he slid back to his seat. Want me to go to L.A.? All expenses, plane, hotel, what have you, to audition this band called King Tut. So you see what I'm doing here. I handle all the talent coming and going. I entertain 24 hours a day. That's the end of the quote.
There's a lot there, man. Kind of seems like Ernie was trying to create something a little less gritty, you know?
Yeah, it definitely seems like it. It says the Frog booked jazz. The clientele found it closer to home than Chuck's Steakhouse in La Jolla. And I think that passage goes far to highlight what Soulful Ernie was trying to do. You know, I think he was trying to establish a place that was upscale, middle class, sophisticated, particularly for black folks who were living in Southeast San Diego. I think that juxtaposition, you know, is really highlighted by the fact that Market Street downtown was considered unsafe.
Things were hectic. At this time, the street element was in full swing all over the city. Maybe 20 streets away, the Mighty Key Gang were ringing bells with their single, Crisis, on Rap West Records. Within a year, the group would receive national attention from their connection to a controversial incident involving the San Diego Police Department.
Today, the Saigon Pen Defense Committee is presenting petitions to the District Attorney's Office demanding that all charges against Saigon Pen be dropped immediately.
Escape, when we're headed for home from the park that day. We had no intention that this day would stay with me in the oven for the rest of our lives. Because what happened that day just wasn't right. Because me, Rick, and Joe got a big surprise. When all we really wanted was to catch a ride. Was this meant to be or was it just bad luck? What Rick and I witnessed on the back of a truck. Because when they pull a pin over and that's his ID, the rest of that story is just a read. Escape.
That was a piece of a mini-documentary we found from 1988 titled I Claim Myself, The Saigon Pen Incident. In 1985, driver Saigon Pen was pulled over during a traffic stop near Encanto by two San Diego police officers, Thomas Riggs and Donovan Jacobs. An intense physical altercation occurred that resulted in Pen shooting and killing one of the officers and shooting and injuring another. Prior to this traumatic incident, Penn was recognized as a martial arts expert and community leader known for mentoring children in Southeast.
There was one officer sitting on top of him, holding him down and hitting him at the same time.
Was that Officer Jacob?
Yes, it was.
And did you observe Officer Riggs?
Yes, he was standing above him.
Did you observe what he was doing?
Yes, he was hitting him with a stick.
Penn was tried not once, but twice, and was eventually acquitted.
This is the verdict with regard to count one, the charge of first-degree murder. The verdict reads, we, the jury, in the above-entitled cause, find the defendant, Sagan Penn, not guilty of the crime of first-degree murder.
Now, there's more to this story, but as Nas would say, there's some
ghetto secrets I can't rhyme in this song. There's some missing pieces I had to leave out.
These are complex situations with real-life circumstances. If you want to know more, look into them. This incident is our first appearance of two things you'll hear come up repeatedly throughout this series. One, San Diego rap life and San Diego street life run very close together. Two, San Diego has a knack for being criminally ahead of the mainstream. Mighty Key Gang's documentary Rap predates NWA's F the Police by 3 years and Tupac's Oakland Assault by 6. That was a lot of info real fast. I'm gonna take a quick break. Let's let some of this set in. I'll come right back to introduce you to a world famous DJ from right here in our backyard. Stick around.
Stay connected to the world around you. KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.
Welcome back. I just walked you through a 1985 police incident that parallels and precedes the Rodney King incident. In the same year as Sagan Penn, street life would be a catalyst for rap in another part of town, thankfully, in a less severe way.
So by the time I was getting out of the military, came back to San Diego,
mm-hmm.
and then I was still reserved, so my little reserve money I would mm-hmm. take and buy records and all that other stuff. I moved back home or whatever to my parents' house or whatever. I was still like 23.
Mm-hmm.
And so bought a drum machine, everything else, and learned how to, program the drum machine, and I was, getting all these records. I was heavily into, like, Culture Club and mm-hmm. all these,
mm-hmm.
Me doing that kind of stuff, I ended up doing my first house party and got all my equipment stolen.
That's DJ. Wait, I'll let him introduce himself.
My name is James Guillory, James D. Guillory. I'm professionally known as DJ Gill, worldwide DJ Gill to some. I'm a DJ and / producer, and had some success at being in doing that.
Gil is a good guy, and what seems like an unfortunate event in the moment turns out to be the start of something good. Gil's lack of DJ equipment led him to linking up with two old friends, Jeff Nelson and DJ King Arthur.
Ooh, then ran into a friend of mine. We went to high school together. His name is Jeff Nelson. And so I end up giving him the bug as far as like DJing or whatever. He learned how to DJ, he's learned how to MC. That's how we end up making this crew.
Mm-hmm.
Guy that grew up the street from me, his name is King Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
He was DJing way before I was, and I would go up to his house because I didn't have any equipment anymore and just kind of watch him DJ or whatever. And then we end up forming this crew, which ended up being the Mid-City crew. So we started doing all the high schools or whatever, started doing City College, that kind of stuff. With Jeff Nelson getting the bug, he ended up getting like a loan from his mom.
Mm-hmm.
She gave him $10,000. We bought like a trailer, put this trailer together to get all our speakers. We had all these speakers that we built, red speakers, whatever. We took these, the design from Sierra Vega, make these huge red speakers because our colors were red and white.
Mm-hmm.
And then became this big crew around San Diego. And along with him buying all this stuff, we bought like a drum machine. And so we decided we was convinced he was gonna do a song. I couldn't find any rap, so we just decided to, we had another young lady that went to high school with us, her name is Stephanie Payne.
I'm Esty Payne, and I'm not ashamed to say the man upstairs, he ain't playing, okay?
She rapped on it too, and then I rapped on a little bars too. But how we came across the guys who actually put the record out, which is San Diego International. Me and this guy up the street, we had like a little band called Jamability. His brother had a partner who had a recording studio that was on Hodden Avenue. And they needed somebody to come in so they could do a sound test. So we went in there and we did what we did and recorded for the first time. And that's when I really got the recording bug.
While Gil was feeding our budding underground scene new music, he's simultaneously sharpening his professional skills at a daytime job with radio station 92.5. If you're keeping a list, write this down as a third thing that sets San Diego apart from other cities. Typically, rappers are one-sided, either good at art or good at business. San Diego artists tend to excel because our art and business acumen are often equally sharp. This has everything to do with our proximity to Los Angeles, but we'll get to that.
92.5, which is 92.5 now. I was an on-air mix jock, so like, you know, we did like the traffic jams, mix songs or whatever. Uh-huh. They would pre-tape it, whatever. And then like any remixes they would want it for the station, later on, when remixes became a thing, they wanted us to do a lot of the remixes on the air. So they would sound special and special for that station.
Were you doing it live, like on-air mixes?
No, I would. I had like a little 8-track studio, and I would, you know, do some overdubbing, whatever. And
as you were recording these remixes for the radio station, were you recording your own music on the side?
Yes, I was.
That balance of art and business is recognized and utilized by the mainstream often. It's one of the things that we're unofficially known for.
We helped Hammer get his song played on the radio. He may or may not admit this, but he sure will remember me. I took Hammer around to not only 92.5, but to Z90. So by Hammer actually tapping into this market and getting added into those stations, Hammer was able to get his record deal. You look at Let's Get It Started. They did his first video here in San Diego and actually recorded here in one of the clubs, which is Rasputin's. We had a club called Rasputin's. They were waiting to see if they was going to add him in any other market. So we got him in San Diego, and he got his record deal. And he was supposed to actually come back and say, either help us do our thing, or, you know, let me do some production on his album.
In radio, breaking a record refers to introducing a listener to a new song they wouldn't have heard otherwise. Today, MC Hammer is a multi-platinum selling artist, and Gil just explained how he helped him break one of his first records here in Southern Cali. He then takes what he did with Hammer and brings it back to his crew, DBX.
It was weird because no one actually told us, hey, you know, produce a song. So we just said, hey, we're just going to make a song, which was this group called DBX. We put it together, this group. The original guys was Bobby Graham. Another guy was Marcel Branch. We recorded this song. The station was playing a lot of our remixes, so we thought we would slide that in. And it was playing on the radio before we even actually had any things pressed up. So, and it actually kind of took off a little bit, which is another story that aligns with MC Hammer, which is a little weird. What we did, we kind of took a note from Hammer and started going around radio station. So we drove in my little truck all the way up the coast to like KMEL, all these different radio stations and stuff, and put the records there and was pushing it. Mm-hmm. Now we started selling some records. Mm-hmm. Problem was, we had an initial investor, and he just wanted all his money back. So we were kind of left holding the bag, so to speak, so the record kind of just died at that moment. It did make some noise, and I got a manager to come in and say, hey, you know, I can get you a record deal and all that other stuff. And he had, like, another act that he was trying to break in, so he said, you do some demos for him and you help him get a deal. Mm-hmm. You know, if you got any other acts, then I'll hook you up, which he did.
Do you remember the gentleman's name and the acts that he wanted you to work with?
The gentleman's name is Daryl Sutton. Mm-hmm. And he had another partner by the name of Delton Dormer. And then the act he wanted me to help him with is
Vicious Beat Posse.
This is Vicious Beat Posse.
Knowledge is dope, so I'm dimming it to you.
This is episode 1 of Rap Diego, a San Diego story. In our next episode, we learn what was happening on the other side of town.
We're the first ones, even before any LA.
Yeah.
Before NWA specifically is the one that's cited all the time, that you guys did it before NWA.
My name's Super Slam, rap's my addiction. All of ours dope breaks for my DJ to mix in. Whenever I hear boom, I gotta dance to it. Grab a girl, clap my hands to it. Drop the bass and I'll be looking on the dance floor. One hit ain't enough, I need more. I'm a musical junkie, let the bass go. It's not a pipe, I don't suck, it's a mic and I blow. Super rhymes I release, that the tune is hype. So fiend in the swing, on the mic like a psycho. Sweetness, Candyman adds flavor to the dope mix. My producer, DJ Gil, got me sprung on. Track the dope groove and lay my tongue now on. Now I'm clocking bucks, my jewelry's truck, and it's time for Candyman to get his cut.
Rap Diego is a co-production of KPBS and Meridian Arts. Host and co-creator, Parker Edison. Episodes written by Jay Smith, Chris Reyes, Don Jegger, and Stephen Flex. Extra special thanks to guest writer, Melody Harold. Editing by Platform Collection. Music soundtrack by Monday Adams. Executive producer for KPBS is Lisa Jane Morissette. KPBS Director of Audio Programming and Operations. Technical and operational support provided by KPBS Technical Producer, Sound Designer, Adrian Villalobos, and KPBS Producer, Julio Ortiz Franco. This programming is made possible in part by the KPBS Explore Content Fund.
Stay connected to the world around you. KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.